I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose.
The weekend is over.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Ah, but don't fret.
You're all winners!
This is Winners of the Weekend.
A huge weekend in the world of sports, and just another huge weekend for Alexander Ovechkin, who scored his 19th goal of the season in 22 games. He's 36 years old. He is on the best start. He's having the best start of his career. He's got 749 goals, and he's having the best start of his career at age 36. The dude is a machine. It does not make any sense. He's now just one goal behind Leon Draisaitl for the lead in the Rocket Richard race. Shout out to Ovi, who's been incredible. And another winner of the weekend, Lindsay Hamilton, our good friend from SportsCenter, was the host of the Leafs broadcast last night. I thought she did a tremendous job. And Chrissy, you know, whenever we talk about Lindsay,
oy vey, oy vey, oy vey.
Yeah, and that oy vey is the James Duthie, because look out, James Duthie. Here comes Lindsay Hamilton taking the job.
You go with that!
Oh, nice. What was that? What was that you take
the cracker?
The cracker eating competition?
Cracker
wow.
Eating contest,
she intense there.
She smoked
a little overboard. All right, go ahead. Go.
All right, I got a couple winners. Obviously, you start first with the Maple Leafs. Great California road trip with a 3-0. Jason Spezza, 1,200 games played yesterday. He's our big winner of the weekend. Shout out to Jason and his family. Michigan football team with the biggest win in school history over the last, 7 years since Jim Harbaugh has taken over. Finally beating Ohio State and setting up a nice matchup against Iowa in the Big Ten championship game. Probably solidifying their chance in the college football playoff, too. Scott Mellenby, to me, is the winner of the weekend because he got out before everything else fell apart in Montreal. Basically said, thanks, but no thanks, but I'm leaving on a high note. Jim Benning, because he's the first GM not to be fired this season, so he gets a nod for winner of the weekend. And I'm surprised you didn't give this a nod for winner of the weekend. Brooks Koepka for spanking. Bryson DeChambeau.
That was
boring. Big news.
That was really boring, man.
It was so boring.
Brooks crushed him, and the chirps were so lame. Barkley was good. Mickelson was good, but, not a lot of competition between those two.
Sucked. And news coming out of last night regarding some Blue Jays players, which we'll get into next year with Steve Phillips. Kevin Gausman, new member of the Blue Jays, 5-year deal, $110 million.
Yep.
And Marcus Semien, thank you for everything you let us enjoy this year as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. You put up record numbers, but man got paid. 7-year deal, $175 million. Big winner of the weekend there.
Man, must be nice. That is, just imagine every 2 weeks your paycheck comes in and it's like $400,000.
Unless you're Ben Simmons and you're broke.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Ben Simmons, man, that guy's still...
Did you hear that report coming out of him?
No, what's going on with him?
So apparently there was a report that came out last week that he might have to come back and play for the Sixers this year because he needs the money. He's entering, like broke stage of his earnings because he's not getting paid.
Yeah, that'd be pretty embarrassing if that was the case. And you always hear the stories about certain athletes who have made millions and millions of dollars and are just completely broke. You hope that's not the case with Ben Simmons, because I don't know how soon we'll see him getting back on a basketball court anytime soon. But you mentioned Kevin Gausman, the newest member of the Toronto Blue Jays. I imagine there will be some kind of press conference in the next day or so with him at the podium alongside Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. A 5-year deal worth $110 million. We asked our MLB analyst Steve Phillips for a scouting report on the Blue Jays' newest starting pitcher.
So first, I think that I think he was plan B to Robbie Ray. And you think, well, geez, why did they sign him if Robbie Ray's still out there? Because, if Gausman went away, when you're a general manager, you have parallel negotiations going on for plans A, B, C, D, and E. And at some point, you have to make a decision on plan B if plan A is dragging on a little bit. And it seems like without Robbie Ray signing, and there didn't seem to be as many reports about the timing for him, I think they looked at it and said, we like Gausman just about as much as we like Robbie Ray. We like the deal relative. Now, it's a lot of money, 5 at 110, but it's less than what I thought he would get, Gausman. I thought he might get up to 120, 125 million. That I think they decided, look, we don't want to lose out on plan A and B. And if B goes off the board and Robbie Ray ends up going somewhere else, then what do we do? So I think getting the deal done was the smart move. And he is a right-handed Robbie Ray in a lot of ways, in that he was a guy that had some struggles early on in his career.
And then, well, he played for Baltimore, so you can't blame him.
Right. And so he struggled. Then he went to Atlanta, and then he went to Cincinnati, and then he went to San Francisco. And in the short season in San Francisco, he started to figure out with the analytics department that they have there, and they do a great job there in San Francisco, that he can throw his fastball, and he scrapped the two-seam fastball and decided to go only four-seam fastballs in the top of the zone. So he can throw 96, 97, 98, top of the zone as a right-hander. And then instead of the wipeout slider like Gausman, he actually scrapped his slider, and he goes to the split and the changeup. And in Major League Baseball this year, there's only one pitcher that got more than 240 swings and misses on a single pitch. And it was Gausman, who got 272 swings and misses on his split finger fastball.
Wow.
It is a really good pitch. He also throws a changeup that he throws down to the zone. It's similar to the split, but has a little different velocity, a little different break to it. And so it's an effective third pitch for him as well. I like him. He's a competitive guy, a good teammate. He'll fit in well. And if not Robbie Ray, it's a real nice option for a guy who's figured out who he is with really good stuff. And so he should age well. He'll pitch at 31. He turns 31 in January. But I think that for the next 5 years, I think they got themselves a solid number two type starter overall.
Steve, are you convinced that this is the end to Robbie Ray, or is this just plan B, what you said? Because according to multiple reports, Robbie Ray is still not close to making his decision. He's obviously meeting with the Angels, who is, you know, I most people believe is his top suitor, but they have yet to meet. So with the Blue Jays getting to their own business, do you think they still have room to add a guy like Robbie Ray?
I think it's unlikely that they do it, but, you know, I think as much as anything, because, you know, at this stage, with Ryu, with Gausman, with Manoa, you know, with Pearson, you know, in Barrios, you know, I don't know that they want to spend that much and lock up that much long-term money for another starting pitcher. And so my sense is they'll probably go for the next Robbie Ray, finding somebody who they might, I think they need to add more pitching. I don't know if it'll be the impact. They've got to figure out what they're going to do at second base, what they're going to do at third base, and whether it'll be, because I think Biggio showed last year, he's really not a third baseman. He didn't look comfortable there. I know the injuries were a factor. Just never looked comfortable at third. But I think his left-handed bat should be in there somewhere. And I think they may, you know, I personally would love to see them go after a Seager or a Trevor Story. I don't think that's going to happen either. And so I think it's more of a Kyle Seager at third base, who's a 30-homer guy in his career, uh-huh. You know, a little older now, but a really solid teammate. He's one of the leaders in Seattle for years. Who could be a left-handed bat, play some third base. I prefer Espinal to be the super sub instead of a starter at third. And so I think they're going to probably spread some money around now to the rest of the field instead of going, you know, all their eggs in another big basket. But look, they're still going to be a very competitive team, and they're not losing a lot. I mean, Robbie Ray was great last year, and Gausman didn't pitch as well as Ray, but he's a really solid pitcher, and I think can handle, and he's pitched in the American League East before too, which is a nice bonus. So I do like him in the rotation.
In conversation with our MLB insider, Steve Phillips, the Toronto Blue Jays, in agreement with Kevin Gausman, formerly of the Giants, on a five-year deal worth $110 million. Now, Steve, that's just one of the big deals that was reported yesterday. Marcus Semien signing with the Texas Rangers, a seven-year deal worth $175 million. So that ends his tenure with the Toronto Blue Jays. You mentioned them trying to find a replacement at second base for him. When you saw the Semien deal come down, what was your reaction?
Well, I wasn't surprised at the annual average value, the $25 million per year. I was just surprised at the 7 years, and that's where agents make their money. It's, you know, when a player's performance, you can pretty much line up how much dollars per year where the player falls in. Where the agent makes his money and does his work for the player is to get the extra years added on the deal. And I'm surprised, you know, 31, that this went to a 7-year deal for a team that, look, Texas was going to have to overpay to get players because they weren't saying, hey, yeah, I think they've got a chance to win there. Simeon's going there with the idea that maybe in the next 2 or 3 years they could start to turn things around and be more competitive. They're not that close. Now, there's talk that they may still be in on Story and or Seager. So we'll see. But, I'm not surprised Simeon signed when he did. He heard an offer he didn't think he would get at 7 years. Scott Boras, picked him up as a client this offseason. And that's where Boras makes his money, is he gets those extra years in the deal. So a bit of a surprise, and it now makes you wonder whether Texas is still in for another infielder and what that does to set the market for where the other guys may end up going.
Yeah, no, it's a nice little Christmas gift that Marcus Simeon received. And it all started when he hired Scott Boras. You knew what his intention was going to be. And look, Texas is a place with no state tax, so clearly he's maximized
right
on his earnings as well, too. Well, a lot of other activity around the major leagues yesterday, and there was a report late last night that Max Scherzer could potentially be ending up with the Mets. Can you confirm or at least give us an update on where the Max Scherzer, bidding is right now with what team he's deciding on?
Yeah, it seems like it's the Angels and the Mets. And the Mets are at either 3 years or potentially 4 years at $42 million per year. So it's a pretty extraordinary deal for an extraordinary pitcher. And, you know, it seemed all along like the West Coast was going to be the preference for Scherzer. He's from out there. He does have, they went to the Dodgers. He enjoyed that. The Giants, the Angels all seem to have some level of interest in him. But Scherzer did just build a house in Jupiter, Florida, which is just south of Port St. Lucie, Florida. And so there could be some tie-in there and some connection. And the Mets, you know, it's really weird. So, you know, the Mets lost out on Steven Matz.
Yeah.
And their plan B was Scherzer. So they lost out on the guy who got about $14 million a year to go for the guy who's going to make $42 million a year. I think that Steve Cohen's got to understand, plan Bs are usually a step back, not right, two or three or four steps forward. But the Mets are in it, man. I mean, I tell you, they spent a ton of money over the weekend. They got Eduardo Escobar, who, oh, by the way, was, I think, the perfect fit for the Blue Jays. He, without Simeon, Eduardo Escobar, you know, switch hits, he plays second and third. He would have been a great fit for the Jays. But the Mets popped him early, I think two at about $20 million total, two times 10. Then they got Starling Marte, that free agent center fielder that can, 45 stolen bases last year. Then the Mets got Mark Canna from Oakland, who had a really good season, 29 home runs last year, and played as a more regular player. And so the Mets are spending money. Their payroll is already over $200 million,
wow,
and they may add another 42. So Steve Cohen, the owner there, who he has a $93 million sterling silver rabbit in his yard.
Same.
So, like, when you have, you have one of those, you can afford the $42 million. Remember, they're paying Robbie Cano. They've got Robbie Cano for two more years at $24 million per year.
Jeez.
After the PED, his second PED suspension. Yeah.
Is Robbie Cano even playing still?
What's that?
Is Robbie Cano even playing still?
Well, he was suspended all year last year for PEDs, and now he's coming back again with 2 years remaining on the deal. In a deal in which they gave up Jared Kelnick and is the main player going to Seattle, and Kelnick's going to be a big part of their team this year.
Wow, that's that rabbit you spoke of. Man, I need to look up that story because that's fascinating to me. Quickly, I want to talk about what's going on at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on December 1st, where Major League Baseball's owners are expected to lock out the players. Now, if that does indeed happen, and we all assume that to be the case, how crazy could the next 48 hours or so be, Steve, considering once the lockout begins, you can't sign a contract? So do you expect just a crazy number of signings and trades to go down in the next couple of days?
Yeah, I do. I think more free agent signings than anything else. And remember, I think today's probably the busy day because, you know, what you do with a player is you make an agreement pending a physical, and you got to get the physical done, too, before the player signs. So and so I think today is going to be the really crazy day because players will agree, then go to the physical tomorrow to get the deal done in time for the first. And so, yeah, I think the next 48 hours, we're going to hear all kinds of reports. Deals will finally get done after the physicals. Players who might normally sort of take a few days to get somewhere to give a physical will be rushing to turn their head and cough for doctors everywhere just so they can get that physical completed. But I do think that, it's going to be nuts. It's really going to be nuts. I think that we'll see Seager come off the board, Scherzer come off the board, potentially Correa come off the board. Baez, I think, remains to be seen a little bit. We saw the Buxton extension. We saw Sandy Alcantara's extension with the Marlins. I mean, here's the thing. I did a SportsCenter hit last night, and I wore a green tie because people are throwing money around. I figured that green was the appropriate tie to go with
yesterday.
Because everybody is spending money.
Well, yeah, wear the green suit today, not the tie.
Exactly. Pretend it's the Masters. That's what I would suggest. I'm looking at this inflatable bunny, 3 feet tall, stainless steel. No, $92 million? Or no, sorry, just $91
million.
That's Steve.
$91 million.
Jeff Koons.
That's what we spent on Mike Piazza when I was Mets GM. We gave him a 7-year deal, one of the biggest deals in baseball. I think it was seven at $91 or $93 million. Who knew?
Piazza, times have changed.
Here's what you have. On one side, you can get Piazza. On the other side, you get the sterling silver bunny. So take your pick. Which do you want?
That's close. Well, Jeff Koons, I mean, he makes some great sculptures. And whether or not they're worth $91 million, we'll see how it all plays out for
beauty
our man.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, Aaron. Mm-hmm. In art. Carlo will tell you that. He's big into art. You know, he goes to museums all
cards,
the time.
Cards.
You know, beauty
cards,
is in the eye of the beholder. You've got to sort of look into the piece to really sort of understand the artist and what they're trying to accomplish.
One of my dumbest things I've ever spent money on in my life was I went to Vegas on a bachelor party and I walked into an art museum and I spent $10,000 on a painting.
Well,
don't
what?
Ask why.
Wait, first of all, why in the world, if you're in Vegas, are you going to an art museum? I mean, that's
exactly.
The first thing that I don't really understand.
Yeah.
And then buying art for $10,000.
Apparently, wow. It had diamonds in it, and it was worth a lot. But,
apparently, you know, don't get it verified.
Well, it does. It does have diamonds.
Okay.
In it, but
where is it right now?
No idea.
Okay. If I paid $10,000 or something, I would probably know where it is. But that's why you played 14 years in the NHL, Steve. Thank you very much for doing this. I imagine you'll be a very, very busy man, very busy analyst on TSN.ca, TSN Radio, everywhere TSN in the next 48 hours. So thank you for taking the time.
You bet. My pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
See you, Steve.
All right. $10,000 on a painting, Coco. Shout out to you. And even more impressively, you don't know where it is at this very moment. I know you've moved a lot. I know you've moved a lot over the course of your life, going from city to city with your hockey career, but you have no idea where this $10,000 painting is.
It's probably in storage somewhere.
Okay.
I've been trying to sell it to somebody because my wife hates it.
And I will offer really cool $100. $100.
Do you want it? I can get it for you.
Bang! Oh yeah, I mean, are you worth something? It has diamonds in it, allegedly.
Yeah, I'll show you. I'll see if I can come up with a picture. Find a picture. It's Christian Lassen, is the name of the artist, and he's got some really cool like water paintings and like moonlight views and underwater sea and stuff like that. Ooh. So I was big into those things. I still am. Like, I have a saltwater fish tank, so I love those images and stuff. But yeah, I'm trying to remember who has it. I know in my moves, I have it packed in storage somewhere, so tough to find out where it is right now.
All right. Well, maybe take a
look. If I find it, it might be a nice little pre-Hanukkah, pre-Christmas. You don't celebrate Christmas, do you?
All right. Now you're talking. It is Hanukkah right now. It's the second night tonight.
Yes.
So Happy Chinooka could be a gift to all of our listeners.
Yeah, Chinooka. It could be a happy, you know, a gift from me to you for being the permanent host of the show. So,
how about happy 10 grand Chinooka. Cash? 10 grand what? Cash instead. Play it again, Chrissy.
Happy Chinooka.
Happy Chinooka. All right.
You want me to give you 10 grand cash when clearly you're raking in CFL bets every weekend.
It's been a good run. It's been a good run. We still have three games left, the East and West Final and the big Grey Cup in Hamilton. And you know, that's where the prop masters really feast. There's a lot of props on the board. Jack Armstrong will join us next, one of the voices of the Toronto Raptors. The Raps are back at home, but they lost last night or yesterday afternoon to the Boston Celtics, and things not sounding too good on the injury front. Jack Armstrong coming up next on First Stop.
That was on a live mic, right?
I don't think it was. First Stop continues here on TSN 1050. Wondering why we're laughing. Our technical producer, 20 Fingers, who gives us a little heads up before we're back on the air, because, you know, Carlo and I are probably saying something stupid that would get us in trouble, but he sneezed as he was telling us we were back on the air, and it just sounded odd. We weren't sure if it
sounded like indeed a fart.
I mean, I guess you could look at it that way. Now I have to welcome in an esteemed broadcaster of Jack Armstrong's ilk after you talking about farting. Wow. I apologize, Jack. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I the word esteemed is kind of a pretty stretch, but I'll take it.
Yes. Esteemed would be an understatement. You are the man, Jack. We appreciate you taking the time to join us this morning, especially after a tough one for the Raps. I mean, they had that six-game road trip that concluded in Indiana. They're back against Boston, one of their top rivals. But the team is so banged up all of a sudden. OG Anunoby, he's missed six games in a row. Now Gary Trent Jr. has been one of the best stories for the Raptors this season. His emergence, he's got a calf injury. We know Kem Birch is hurt. I mean, it's a little dispiriting to see just how banged up this team is and not being able to overcome those significant injuries.
Yeah, you know, obviously, as you know, I mean, the first game back from a long West Coast trip is always incredibly challenging, particularly when you get home. You know, you land at like 1:30 in the morning on Friday night, Saturday morning, and then you got to play at 6 o'clock Sunday. It's a quick turnaround, and you got, you know, I've experienced it in my years doing this, and it's one of the toughest games you ever have to play during the course of a season, many times tougher than a back-to-back. And then you're losing three starters. I mean, theoretically, I mean, Kem Birch would probably be your starting five, and obviously Anunoby at the three, and Gary Trent at the two. You know, that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. And then, you know, your lineup rotations are all out of whack. You could just see it last night right from the start that it was going to be an uphill battle. And I thought they did battle. I thought they played really hard and tried their best. The challenge is when you have guys that are in unfamiliar places and you're asking maybe a little too much from them, it becomes that much harder, that much more difficult to overcome a decent team. I wouldn't say the Celtics are a great team, but a decent team, and they just couldn't do it. You know, and Fred VanVleet's just doing an incredible job right now trying to do everything possible and giving you some really good performance and heavy lifting. But it's just a lot to ask right now. And, you know, it's just, you know, you never like to use injuries as an excuse. They're a reality. And the reality is right now for this group, it's so young, it's hard to overcome that.
Jack, there was a lot of talk around the struggles that the Raptors faced last year of not being at home and how much home playing at the Scotiabank Arena was an advantage to this group. And since they've been at home and the return to Scotiabank Arena, they boast a 2-7 record, and they'll play 16 of their next 20 games at home. I know they've come off a long road trip, and you touched on sometimes that first game back can be, you know, a tough rebound. But what do you make of their play at home being so or at least their record being so mediocre, or at least when you say mediocre is a kind way to say it, but it's been bad, 2-7.
Yeah, no, I'm surprised. You know, now tomorrow night they'll have Memphis without Ja Morant, so that's helpful based upon how banged up the Raptors are. But I'm surprised. Because they've done a pretty good job on the road. I mean, you know, you look at their record on the road. I mean, they have a winning record on the road. Last night is easily explainable. Some of the others are a little bit more difficult to explain. But nonetheless, it's been an issue. And Toronto's had a great home court advantage for many, many years. And, you know, you look around the NBA right now and the NHL. I read an interesting article about it the other day. I mean, a lot of the markets are down 10%. Many of them are down 20%. I've seen it firsthand on the road. You don't see that in Toronto. I mean, you're still seeing great crowds, and that's been a tremendous credit to our fan base. And compared to what they had to deal with a year ago in Tampa, Fred VanVleet, I think, even commented on it, you know, but it's frustrating because everyone's so excited to be back playing in Toronto, and unfortunately they're just not able to get over the hump and get some wins at home. So you hope that turns. There's plenty of time left. And as you mentioned, Carlo, there's a lot of games coming up at home. And, you know, the biggest thing, whether you're home, road, wherever, good health is a major factor. And when you're missing those three guys, I don't care where you play, it becomes that much harder to win.
Our NBA analyst, Jack Armstrong, our guest here on First Up, Aaron Kurolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. It was a weird game for Scotty Barnes, Jack. I mean, he commits a couple of quick turnovers. Nick Nurse pulls him. He checks back in later in the first quarter and all of a sudden starts shooting threes like Steph Curry. 9 three-point attempts. What was going on with Scotty Barnes? And do you think this three-point barrage, which Nick Nurse has talked about throughout the course of the season, wanting Scotty to shoot the three ball more. I mean, that's just the natural progression of any NBA player, especially a 20-year-old like Scotty Barnes. But I think that might be very notable going forward, because if he's expanding his range and building confidence in that regard, that's a whole new element to his game.
Well, they're empowering him too, which is really cool. You know, and I said it on the air the other night, you know, when he was shooting a free throw, his mechanics are sound. I mean, he's going to be okay. I mean, and as you could see last night, I mean, he'll become a good shooter. It's just going to, you know, and right now he's had a really, really good rookie year. And I like, you know, I've said it many times, they've thrown him in the deep end. And I think he's handled himself pretty well. Yeah, you know, he had a few mistakes there early. I think Nick did the right thing of kind of saying, hey, you got to sit down and reflect on this for a few minutes. And, you know, some young players don't react well to that. And you want to find out what they're made of. And clearly you have a young man who's got high character, who's a tough guy, who can be a good self-critic and respond from it and grow from it. And I think he showed a really good level of professionalism and said, all right, I wasn't good in that stretch, but I'm going to be better the rest of the way. And he was. He played well. And, you know, if he can be a guy that can be a sound three-point shooter along with all the other stuff he has going in his game, watch out. And, again, he's just scratching the surface right now. But I like the fact that they're empowering him and they're challenging him. And they're putting expectations on him. And there are going to be times where he's got to push through the fatigue. And there's going to be nights like last night. I think he looked like your classic guy. Oh, my goodness, this pro sports stuff is hard. You know, I was on the road for a few weeks. I don't know if I had my laundry done, and here I got to play another game. You know? And it just... he came out and he got jolted right away. Sit down and watch for a little bit. Okay, you got to get back into the moment. So, but to me, again, that's good stuff. That's how guys grow. That's how guys learn. They get better. And having a guy like Fred VanVleet as a teammate, he keeps you accountable.
Jack, another weird, I guess, kind of chapter in the Goran Dragic situation with the Raptors. We know when he initially was traded to Toronto was not enthused, and then he was saying all the right things, and now he has been excused from the team while he tends to a personal matter with no timeline for his return, and there are reports that the Raptors don't expect to see Goran Dragic back in Toronto at all, and he could be bought out or traded before the trade deadline. What do you think is going on behind the scenes with Dragic, and is there any chance we see him again in a Raptors uniform?
Well, number one, I think in terms of behind the scenes, I think what Bobby Webster said is straight on. I mean, they're excusing him for a personal situation, and where it goes from here, your guess is as good as mine. But I don't think there's any like hidden agenda going on or anything. I think there's, you know, the fact that he has something to address, and they're going to give him the time to do that. I think clearly we all know, based upon minute distribution, when you look at a Delano Banton, even a Malachi Flynn to a degree, even a Gary Trent, you know, like, a, I mean, it's clear that he's not in their plans, you know. I mean, you know, they're gonna build. They understand that this is more of a long-term thing than a short-term thing. And, I mean, clearly the guy's resume is such that, you know, he would play if he was in their long-term plans. But I just think it's the right thing to do. To come to grips with, hey, where are we at as an organization? And we're better suited playing these young guys because they're going to be here long term, and we got to figure out what they're about. And I think he's been incredibly professional. He's a really good guy. I had a nice chat with him actually Friday night in Indianapolis, just standing on the court chat. And he's a gentleman. He's a good man. And he's a heck of a player. It just sometimes things are circumstantial and from a playing perspective, and it just doesn't work out in a particular market. And, you know, the numbers have to fit a certain deal and a transaction to make it work. But nonetheless, do I think Goran Dragic will be able to play for somebody again in the NBA? There's no question. And he'll be a very good player for whoever he plays for. But beyond that, I don't know. I can't speak to what the personal issue is because I don't know what it is.
Jack, as always, we appreciate your time. And if I can, I'd like to book you for next Monday morning because there is a big event happening in Buffalo next Monday night. The Patriots in town. And, ooh, man, for Carlo, for you, for Bill's Mafia, I imagine the preparations are already beginning. The mental hurdles to overcome Belichick coming to town must be a little daunting for you guys. How you feeling?
Well, I watched them play Tennessee yesterday. I think I said this to you last week. I mean, if just strictly the eyeball test right now, they're playing better football than the Bills right now. So, you know, the Bills got their hands full. It'll be a challenging opponent. So I guess you feel more comfortable calling me on Monday morning than Tuesday morning. So this Monday night could be
either
a
or
night, win, lose, or draw. But no, I'm excited about it. I mean, you know, hey, look, right now, if the season ended today, the Bills would be in the playoffs as well as the Patriots. So this is a good litmus test. Now, obviously, I think the standard and the bar that the Bills set a year ago for themselves was a lot higher than coming into the year. So they probably didn't expect that they would be in a game and going into it that the Patriots would be ahead of them in an event like this. And they still got to play them in New England a few weeks from now. So, yeah, the tables have turned a little bit, but maybe this is the shot in the arm and the jolt that the Bills need to get their – a true identity back and get where they want to get to. But it's going to be, the AFC is crazy. The top teams is not, the margin of error between those teams is not that much. And we'll start finding out who the real contenders are here in the weeks ahead.
Jack, as always, thanks for the time, my friend. Have yourself a great day.
You got it, guys. Have a great day.
See you, Jack.
All right. That's Jack Armstrong. You notice I took Jack's have a great day extra from Jack before he was able to give it to us. I don't know if you noticed that. I knew. Jack loves ending his radio hits. Have a great day. I told him to have a great day before he
veteran
told us.
Move. Veteran
or
move.
Or the opposite.
You.
Actually, kind of mowed his lawn a little bit, but in any case. We'll be back to wrap things up here on First Up in just a moment. We've got Monday Night Football tonight. The Seattle Seahawks in Washington play the football team. Need a big performance from my boy Taylor Heinicke. Come up big, Taylor. We need you. You could be my second favorite Taylor behind Taylor Swift with a big performance. Leafs lunch coming up at noon with Al's brother. I think he goes by Mike DiStefano now. I don't love about that. That's a poor decision. Poor career move from Al's brother. But he and Julia Teixeira will have Leafs lunch at noon and gameplay. I think Cause is still away in South Africa. Ooh, tough time for a trip to South Africa. And Overdrive at 4 o'clock. So for 20 fingers. For a rod, for our intern, Luca. Carlo Koliakovo, I'm Aaron Korolnik, and for the end of today's show, we end with a chow.
Happy Chinooka.
And happy Chinooka.